Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, December 3rd, 2020. Coming up this hour.
The U.S. suffers its deadliest day ever from the pandemic.
Infections climb across the country while cases in California hit a new record.
For the first time in weeks, there appears to be progress on a stimulus package.
And U.S.-China tensions return as the House backs curbs on Chinese stocks.
Governor Cuomo expects New York to receive the first vaccine doses soon. Plus, Ivanka Trump has been deposed about funds for her father's inauguration committee. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. A big trade in the NBA, and the Steelers finally played the Ravens. Pittsburgh won to remain undefeated.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And U.S. futures are struggling for direction this morning. We're coming up to 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 2 points. Dow futures down 40. NASDAQ futures higher, up 19. The DAX in Germany's down about 0.5%. CAC in Paris down 0.4%. And the FTSE 100 is down about 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32. The yield 0.92%. The yield on the 2-year 0.15%. 5%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.6% or 27 cents at $45.02 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.7% or $12.10 at $18.42.30 an ounce. The euro 1.2116 against the dollar. The yen 104.29. Nathan.
Karen, we're coming off the deadliest day ever from the pandemic. Daily deaths in the U.S. topped 2,700 for the first time, and infections continue to climb. California has posted another day of record cases. Ed Baxter has the latest from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
Over 20,000 new infections day to day, over 2,000 more than when the previous record was set last week. Hospitalizations, also a record, climbed almost 3.5%. Earlier this week, Governor Newsom said that the ICU beds could reach a maximum number by the end of the month. Positivity at 6.9%. The governor has promised swift rollbacks if the numbers don't slow. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thank you. As deaths from the virus hit a record, infections are not far behind. Daily cases in the U.S. topped 200,000 for just the second time, and it only gets worse from here. That's according to CDC Director Robert Redfield.
December and January and February are going to be rough times. I actually believe they're going to be the most difficult time in the public health history of this nation.
As cases surge, plans to roll out vaccines are coming into focus. States submit proposals to the federal government for distribution of Pfizer's vaccine tomorrow. They do the same for Moderna's shot next week. General Gustav Perna is chief operating officer for Operation Warp Speed.
I am incredibly confident that these private-public partnerships are ready to execute based on the governor's priorities and plans to do so.
Perna says 100 million people could receive vaccines by the end of February if shots from Pfizer and Moderna are both cleared by the FDA.
Europe also remains in the grip of the pandemic. Deaths in Germany are at the highest level since April. That has the country extending its lockdown into next year. We get the latest from Bloomberg's Sandra Kilhoff.
Bars, gyms, and cinemas will remain closed until January 10th, with the German government due to reconvene with regional leaders on January 4th to reassess the restrictions. Chancellor Angela Merkel says infection rates are still far too high. Total infections have more than doubled since the measures started. It is also unclear if a vaccine will be available in Germany before Christmas. In London, Sandra Kilhoff, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Sandra, thank you. As the pandemic surges, the effort to stem the economic fallout is gathering steam. For the first time in weeks, there's movement on a U.S. stimulus package. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer are now backing a bipartisan plan. We get more from Bloomberg's Chris Anstey.
After insisting on a $2.4 trillion stimulus package in the run-up to the election, they have now made a significant move and have proposed that a $908 billion bipartisan plan be the basis for new negotiations with the Republicans. So this is a significant change, something that could break the logjam.
President-elect Joe Biden is urging Congress to pass a robust package. Congress has a short window to act, and it's not clear if President Trump would sign a measure.
While Congress negotiates stimulus, the Fed is standing pat. The central bank is in no hurry to taper bond purchases, but Fed Chair Jay Powell is not signaling he wants to ramp them up either. Powell told a House committee the Fed's priority is to keep rates low and keep its tools working until it's sure the economy is past the fallout from the pandemic.
Meantime, it looks like President Trump will get one more chance to put his stamp on the Fed. The Senate today is expected to confirm Christopher Waller to serve on the central bank's board. At the same time, Judy Shelton's nomination remains stalled with little to no chance of confirmation this month.
After a bit of a lull, tension is brewing again between the U.S. and China. The House has approved legislation that could lead to Chinese companies getting kicked off U.S. exchanges. We get the very latest from Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie in Beijing.
The U.S. House of Representatives passed the bill that was previously green-lighted by the Senate back in May. It will now go to President Trump, who is expected to sign the legislation into law in what would be seen as a watershed moment. The bill requires companies to let U.S. inspectors review their financial audits, something Beijing has long been opposed to due to what it says are confidentiality concerns. It would also require companies to disclose if they're under government control. Failure to allow audit inspections for three consecutive years would lead to a company being banned from U.S. exchanges. In Beijing, Tom McKenzie, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Tom, thank you. There's also tension on another front as the U.S. restricts travel visas for millions of members of China's Communist Party. New rules allow party members to obtain visas for just 1 month. Previously, they were good for 10 years. The move comes as the U.S. Embassy in Beijing says China's Communist Party tries to influence Americans through propaganda and economic coercion.
Finally, oil is in focus this morning as OPEC and its allies make progress in talks on output cuts, and that's increasing chances today's meeting can salvage a deal after failed negotiations earlier this week. One delegate tells Bloomberg News discussions are centered on the gradual easing of output cuts over several months. Checking prices now on the NYMEX, crude is lower by 0.6% to $45 even. Brent is at $47.98. This is Bloomberg. It's now 6:07 on Wall Street. Time to check what's been happening in New York City and around the world. For that, we turn to Michael Barr. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says he expects New York to receive the first doses of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine by mid-December, once approved by the FDA. Cuomo says the costs of administering coronavirus vaccines to almost 20 million New Yorkers will be astronomical and can't be the burden of the state.
There has to be funding to administer the vaccines. It's not enough to say, we'll deliver them to your state. That's very nice. FedEx can deliver them to the state.
Cuomo says healthcare workers and long-term care facility residents will be the first to receive the vaccine along CDC guidelines. Police broke up a huge party at a Long Island home after getting calls about an influx of cars and people. Authorities found up to 400 people at the Brookhaven House, a violation of the state's prohibitions on gatherings during the pandemic. Officials say the house had been rented on Airbnb. Struggling business owners are pushing back against COVID restrictions. Yesterday, a demonstration took place outside a Staten Island bar shut down for operating in a designated orange zone. Hundreds of angry New Yorkers once again faced off with police after the owner of Max Public House was arrested Tuesday. He declared the building an autonomous zone, refusing to stop serving customers indoors despite orders from the mayor and governor. This man compared operating rules to a store.
Target's not a health risk. Walmart's not a health risk. The hypocrisy. Riots are not health risks.
In Michigan, a judge shut down the effort to reopen bars and restaurants, ruling that the state can keep establishments closed under its pandemic order. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
We want them to stay in business. We just recognize that the nature of this virus means that activity in-person dining right now is a dangerous thing to do with as much COVID as we have across Michigan.
President Trump's daughter and White House senior advisor Ivanka Trump sat for a deposition with the D.C. Attorney General's office. CNN was the first to report it's part of their ongoing investigation into President Trump's 2017 inaugural committee, which is said to be looking into how it spent funds. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. 6:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stanshower.
Thanks, Nathan. A blockbuster trade in the NBA, a swap of all-star point guards. Russell Westbrook, who said he wanted out of Houston, is going to Washington, with John Wall going to the Rockets. Westbrook is 32, once an MVP during his time in Oklahoma City. Three straight years, he averaged a triple-double, something only done before by Oscar Robertson. Wall is 30, was once the first pick of the draft. Spent 9 years with the Wizards, injured this past season, but Kevin Durant had been working out with him and recently said that Wall looked amazing. The Steelers did not look all that impressive. Maybe it was rust. Maybe it was playing before no fans on a Wednesday afternoon. They still won the three times postponed game with Baltimore, 19-14, and Pittsburgh is now 11-0, trying to be the first team to have a 16-0 regular season since the 2007 Patriots. Daniel Jones did not practice with the Giants, but said his injured hamstring is feeling better. As of now, Jones not expected to play Sunday when the Giants visit NFC West leading Seattle. The teams vying to win the NFC East are all big Week 13 underdogs. Washington has to play in Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia is in Green Bay. College football, Saturday's game between Michigan and Maryland won't be played due to COVID. College basketball, Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut. St. John's lost to BYU 74-68. First loss for the Red Storm after three wins. And Seton Hall lost at Rhode Island 76-63. Gonzaga, ranked number one, came from behind and beat West Virginia 87-82. As expected, the Yankees tendered Gary Sanchez despite his major league worst 147 batting average. So he's staying with the Yanks. The Cubs did likewise with Chris Bryant, but they non-tendered slugger Kyle Schwarber. He becomes a free agent. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. Right now, S&P futures are down, but just by 1 point. Dow futures lower by 33 points. NASDAQ futures on the rise, higher by almost 21 points. 10-year Treasury is up 1/32. The yield at 0.93%. Yield on the 2-year note, 0.15%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's just before 6:12 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by National Realty. NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and global stocks are pausing near all-time highs. Treasuries are steady, with a more sober mood reflecting concerns about fragile economic recoveries. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, they're down about 1.5 points. Dow futures down 32, while NASDAQ futures are higher, up 20. The DAX in Germany's down 0.33%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32, yield 0.93%. They yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.8% or 36 cents at $44.92 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.7% or $12.20 at $18.42.40 an ounce. The euro 1.2114 against the dollar. British pound 1.3429 and the yen's at 104.33. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President-elect Joe Biden has swung behind a bipartisan COVID-19 relief effort. That comes as his top Capitol Hill allies cut their demands for a $2 trillion plus measure by more than half. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has been unwilling to abandon a $550 billion GOP plan that has failed twice. The new plan would include establishing a $300 per week jobless benefit and sends billions to state and local governments. More than 2,700 COVID-19 deaths were recorded in the U.S. yesterday. That is an all-time high, and more than 100,000 COVID patients are in U.S. hospitals. The CDC is also projecting up to 200,000 more Americans could die from the virus in the next 3 months. In the NFL, the Steelers remain undefeated after beating the Ravens in a rare Wednesday afternoon game, 19-14. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg QuickTake, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael. Thank you. It's 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And let's pick up on what Michael was just mentioning about a coronavirus pandemic that now seems to be worse than it's ever been since it first began in this country nearly 9 months ago. Dr. Stuart Ray is with us, Vice Chair of Medicine at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Good morning, Doctor. We just heard from Michael, the CDC director, saying that the next 3 months could be the worst public health crisis this nation has ever seen. What are you foreseeing?
Well, you know, it's a mix of messages because we have a tremendous number of people in hospital, 100,000, which represents more than 10% of our staffed hospital beds in the United States. It's clear that this is not just a numbers thing. This is a very real crisis. We also have a high number of deaths. I think we have to understand yesterday's reported deaths spike in the reporting, because over the holidays we saw sort of a lull, and I think that was probably partly an artifact of reporting, but clearly we're on the rise with deaths as well. And so we have this situation where we have a huge number of very sick people, and the one silver lining is we're starting to see, you know, benefits in terms of the efforts on vaccines. So those are around the corner, but they're not going to get us out of this winter spike. And then we have treatments like dexamethasone and others that seem to be effective, maybe blunting some of the deaths, but we're still going to see a big toll, and we're at risk of overwhelming our hospitals.
At what point do you think we could see hospitals overwhelmed?
Well, you know, when we're at the point where there are no ICU beds, which happened briefly in eastern Iowa, we've seen that happen in Utah, in some hospitals where things are really pushed to the edge. There's a risk that people simply won't get the care that they need because there are not the resources to provide them that would normally be there if we had capacity. So I think we've pushed near that tipping point a number of times in multiple hospitals, and we're probably going to realize in retrospect that some of the outcomes for a variety of conditions were worse because we allowed our hospitals to get overwhelmed.
We've seen cities like Los Angeles, the second largest city in this country, of course, now ordering people to stay at home. Do you see a need for further restrictions in other parts of the country? And do you think that's something that's actually going to happen?
Well, I do think that, you know, we try to do this focused, staged response to the crisis. And when things are out of control, there's a need for increasingly restrictive approaches, and they do seem to be effective when we do them. I think the hard part is figuring out how big that bubble needs to be and whether neighboring areas need to be restricted to avoid spread, because I think that's what really has been the problem. We've had this whack-a-mole approach to the problem. I don't think we would want, for instance, a national lockdown when we have problems in focused areas, but we do need to try to extend the area of restriction in a staged way to try to limit spillover into neighboring jurisdictions.
Of course, we had the UK clear Pfizer's vaccine for emergency use, and it looks as though the same could happen here in the U.S. next week. Do you see any hurdles ahead of U.S. approval of the shots that are coming down the pike?
I don't think there are big hurdles for this emergency use approval. We haven't heard any big risks that surprised us with these first two RNA vaccines. I think that it's looking pretty good. Clearly, downstream of approval is distribution and delivery. And for these, there's some challenges given the storage requirements, but I think people are really trying to get those addressed. I think the big bottleneck is just going to be having enough doses for the people at risk. There's going to be a prioritization process, and there's going to be lots more people who need this vaccine than have it initially. And that's going to lead to some confusion, I think, over the winter and early spring.
And not just that, but there are going to be very limited supplies, at least in the short term, as production starts to ramp up. In our last 30 seconds here, how long do you think it's going to take before these approved vaccines start to make a dent in this pandemic?
I think we're going to be seeing this into mid-2021, mid-calendar 2021. And then we may see some signs that things are improving. I think we also saw that for whatever reason, the summer was a little lighter, and so I think those things will help get things under better control. And if we stay serious, then next fall should be significantly better than this one has been.
And let's certainly hope so. Thank you for this, Doctor. Great having you on with us again. Dr. Stuart Ray is Vice Chair of Medicine at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, which is supported by Michael Bloomberg, founder and majority owner of Bloomberg LP, the parent company of Bloomberg Radio. Taking a look at markets right now, mixed action in futures contracts with S&P futures little changed. Dow futures down 28 points right now. NASDAQ futures higher by 22 points. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd with the yield at 0.93% for a 10-year Treasury note. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Land Rover. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer or call 1-800-FIND-4WD for special offers at the Land Rover Season of Adventure sales event now through January 4th. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130
to Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991
to Boston.
Bloomberg 1061
to San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960
to the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119
and around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It is 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and we're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. We're coming off the deadliest day ever from the pandemic. Daily deaths in the U.S. topped 2,700 for the first time as infections continue to climb. And it's only getting worse from here. That's according to CDC Director Robert Redfield.
Yeah, the mortality concerns are real. And I do think, unfortunately, before we see February, we could be close to 450,000 Americans have died from this virus.
The death toll currently stands at 273,000. Daily deaths or daily cases in the U.S. topped 200,000 for just the second time, while California reports another day of record infections. Melissa Johnson Camacho is a nurse at UC Davis Medical Center, where the staff is posting a 20% positive test rate.
I'm worried about nurses getting each other sick and not having enough nurses for all these patients that are coming in.
And as cases surge, plans to roll out vaccines are coming into focus. States submit proposals to the federal government for a distribution of Pfizer's vaccine tomorrow. They do the same for Moderna's shot next week.
As the pandemic surges, the effort to stem the economic fallout is gathering steam. For the first time in weeks, there's movement on a U.S. stimulus package. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer are now backing a bipartisan plan. The measure calls for a $900 billion proposal to serve as a baseline for negotiations.
Meantime, tension is brewing again between the U.S. and China. The House has approved legislation that could lead to Chinese companies getting kicked off U.S. exchanges. That's if regulators aren't allowed to review their financial audits. We get more from Bloomberg's Jody Schneider in Hong Kong.
It has won bipartisan support in the House, easily cleared the Senate. And since it's the same bill, it will now go to President Trump, who is expected to sign it, kind of in what you might call a parting shot at Beijing before he leaves office in January.
And there's another parting shot as the U.S. restricts travel visas for millions of members of China's Communist Party. New rules will allow party members and their families to obtain visas for just 1 month. Previously, they were good for up to 10 years.
Futures this morning, a little change. Dow futures, they're down 20, and NASDAQ futures up 25. But again, S&P futures, little change. The DAX in Germany is down 0.33%. The 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 0.93%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.7% or 32 cents at $44.96 a barrel, and COMEX gold is up 0.8%. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 6:33 on Wall Street, and this news update is brought to you by Land Rover. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer or call 1-800-FIND-4WD for special offers at the Land Rover Season of Adventure sales event now through January 4th. Land Rover, above and beyond. Here's Michael Barr.
Thank you, Nathan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says he expects New York to receive the first doses of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine by mid-December, once approved by the FDA. Cuomo says black and brown people have already suffered the effects of the COVID pandemic in disproportionate numbers, and it stops here. The governor added he will make sure every community receives the vaccine in equal proportion.
I'm not going to enhance and aggravate the discrimination that has already been manifested by now excluding them or discriminating against them in the vaccination process.
He says healthcare workers and long-term care facility residents will be the first to receive the vaccine along CDC guidelines. Ivanka Trump has been deposed by attorneys alleging that President Trump's 2017 inauguration committee misused donor funds. A new court filing, first reported by CNN, notes that the president's daughter and a senior White House advisor was interviewed by the Washington, D.C. Attorney General's office. The office accused the committee of making more than $1 million in improper payments to the president's Washington, D.C. hotel. Barack Obama says he will absolutely take a vaccine for COVID-19 as long as Dr. Anthony Fauci says it's safe. In a radio interview on SiriusXM's The Joe Madison Show, the former president says he may even have it filmed or on live TV.
I trust this science.
Okay.
And what I don't trust is getting COVID.
Former Presidents Bush and Clinton also say they will take the vaccine on TV. Alaska authorities say it's believed six people are missing and four homes have been destroyed after multiple mudslides were reported in the community of Haines. Arizona Democrat Mark Kelly was sworn into the U.S. Senate yesterday, shrinking the Republican majority and likely dooming President Trump's nomination of Judy Shelton to the Federal Reserve. The Rockefeller Center tree lighting ceremony took place last night.
Three, two, one.
What's normally a crowded tourist hotspot during the holiday season was instead mask-mandated, time-limited, and socially distanced due to the pandemic. The tree had its holiday lights turned on in an event that was broadcast on NBC TV but closed to the public. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. Almost 6:36 on Wall Street. John Stashower is here with the Bloomberg Sports Update.
Thanks, Nathan. It was Wednesday afternoon football in Pittsburgh, and it was a sloppy, sluggish game. There were four turnovers in the first quarter. The Steelers, as expected, beat the COVID-ravaged Ravens 19-14, but Mike Tomlin does not sound like the coach of a team with an 11-0 record.
Really disappointed in our performance tonight. We did enough to win, but that's all. It was really junior varsity, to be quite honest with you, and it was in all three phases. We couldn't run the ball effectively when we needed to. We dropped too many significant passes, very catchable, makeable passes. We didn't make significant plays in the special teams game. Our kickoff coverage unit wasn't good enough. We turned the damn ball over. We gave up big plays in critical moments on defense. Can't have it.
That's after a win. As NBA players begin to start workouts towards the new season, already 48 positive tests have come in. There were none when the playoffs took place in the bubble in Orlando. And a big trade made last night. Houston sent the unhappy Russell Westbrook to Washington for John Wall, a swap of all-star point guards. As the Lakers get ready to begin defense of their championship, they have given LeBron James a two-year contract extension, $85 million. He's now signed through 2023 when he'll be 39. Some have said LeBron wants to play long enough that he can play with his son, who's now 16. NBA schedule comes out today. The Nets already know that they'll open up against Golden State and then play Boston on Christmas. College basketball, top-ranked Gonzaga beat West Virginia. Second-ranked Baylor beat fifth-ranked Illinois. Texas on a shot for the second left, top North Carolina by two. Locally, first loss for St. John's after three wins, beaten by BYU 74-68. And Rhode Island scored the last 10 points, beat Seton Hall 76-63. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. It's 6:37 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
Fox News is holding more cards than Trump realizes. I'm Tara LaChapelle, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. President Donald Trump and a pair of fledgling conservative news networks seem intent on taking down Rupert Murdoch's Fox News channel, but it won't be easy. In the weeks since he lost his reelection bid, Trump has been urging his followers to switch from Fox to the more MAGA-friendly alcoves of Newsmax TV and One America News Network. But there's one wall Trump helped build that offers Fox immense protection, the one surrounding its profits. The majority of Fox News' revenue comes from lucrative affiliate deals with cable providers like Comcast and Charter. Those contracts last years, and Fox just renewed a bunch of them. That means Fox has its biggest source of profits locked in for quite a while at favorable rates, even as U.S. households continue cutting the cord. So even if a chunk of viewers do switch to Newsmax or a potential Trump streaming service, the business may be relatively safe. I'm Tara LaChapelle. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPINGO on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPINGO. We get another reading later this morning on the labor market ahead of tomorrow's jobs report. Weekly jobless claims this time around are going to come with a catch. The Government Accountability Office is raising doubts about the accuracy of the data. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice reports.
This is what we have to work with as government analysts iron out the flaws. In the prior report, jobless claims posted the first back-to-back increase since July, rising to 778,000. Bloomberg Economics says widening coronavirus restrictions are taking a toll on the labor market, forcing businesses to cut hours and capacity. So anticipate another elevated reading today and perhaps some guidance on the Labor Department's efforts to repair the data problem. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinnie, thanks. Turning to earnings now, Snowflake, the software maker that debuted with the year's biggest IPO, is out with a lackluster forecast for the current quarter. Details on that now from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
It signals fierce competition in cloud computing. Product revenue, which makes up more than 90% of sales, will be $162 million to $167 million in the period ending in January. Analysts on average estimated $166 million, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. Snowflake's data warehouse software is like a vacuum, sucking up information strewn across different systems so businesses can analyze it all together. The company competes against the cloud computing divisions of Amazon, Microsoft, and Alphabet, as well as open-source vendor Cloudera and Oracle. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And finally, UPS is trying to keep from being overwhelmed by the holiday rush. The shipper is temporarily restricting some packages it takes from big retailers like Nike, Gap, and L.L. Bean. UPS says it's steering large customers to ship on days when volume isn't as heavy. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Brought to you by the Jewish Communal Fund. JCF's donor-advised fund is the smart choice to manage your philanthropy. Open a JCF fund now and lock in a 2020 tax deduction. Visit jcfny.org.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. stock index futures are struggling for direction this morning with S&P futures that'll change, Dow futures down 21, and NASDAQ futures higher up 26. The DAX in Germany is down 0.4%. 10-year Treasury up 0.32, yield 0.92%, yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.5% or 24 cents at $45.04 a barrel, and COMEX gold up 0.75% or $13.70 at $18.43.90 an ounce. The euro 1.2126 against the dollar. British pound 1.3437. And the yen is at 104.31. And CIBC and TD Bank both reported fourth quarter profit that beat analyst estimates. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, the U.S. had its deadliest day ever with COVID-19 fatalities topping 2,700. Hospitalizations in the country surpassed 100,000 for the first time. Los Angeles ordered residents to stay home and businesses that require in-person work to cease operations. President Trump is said to be considering another cabinet firing with less than 7 weeks left in office, and it's said to be Attorney General William Barr. Several reports say President Trump is livid at Barr for declaring the Justice Department has not seen fraud that would change the outcome of the election. One official tells the Washington Post several people are trying to persuade Trump not to fire Barr. In the NFL, the Steelers remain undefeated after beating the Ravens in a rare Wednesday afternoon game, 19-14. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, where it's coming up on 6:49 on Wall Street. Time to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include the House passing legislation that could lead to Chinese stocks being delisted in this country. President-elect Joe Biden considering two governors and a former surgeon general to lead his health team. And President Trump keeping up unproven claims of voter fraud in a 46-minute online video. Also making news this morning, Democrats getting behind a scaled back stimulus to try to restart talks. For more, we're joined by Brown University political science chair Wendy Schiller. Professor, good to have you on with us this morning, a morning where it seems like stimulus hopes spring eternal. But how much hope do you put in Speaker Pelosi and Minority Leader Schumer backing this bipartisan legislation that was worth about $900 billion that was put forward this week?
Good morning, Nathan. Well, I mean, I think that they recognize that the whole country is being hit really hard by this, but that the areas that are, traditionally supportive of Democrats are getting hit again really hard. And they had wanted direct aid for states and cities. They couldn't get it from Trump. They're not going to get it from the Senate Republicans. So basically someone like Durbin, who represents Illinois, a big city like Chicago, has to make a decision, assistant minority leader in the Democratic Party, and say, all right, we've got to get something. Especially unemployment, either top off or extension or some combination of those things. And I think the Democrats want to get what they can and not turn this into the first battle that Biden has to face once he's inaugurated.
Is this about the pandemic getting to the level that it's at now, or is this a dose of political reality, given how the election turned out for the House, particularly with Democrats losing seats in November?
Well, I do think that the Democrats are not looking at a scenario that they hope to be looking at come January, which was a majority Democratic Senate and then picking up more seats in the House, where they could really, write their own ticket with Biden. So given that that's out the window, even if the Democrats take one or two of those Georgia seats, that's still not really a likely scenario. You can control the Senate barely, and have a very razor-thin margin in the House now for the Democrats. So, yeah, it's a political reality. But I think it's also about what they hope Biden can achieve once he becomes president and taking one really big thing off the table before he starts that job. And I think that's a big incentive for them, because then they can turn to things like infrastructure, which would also help the economy.
Well, what's your sense of what President Biden could achieve, given the realities of what Senate control is going to look like either way, depending on how the Georgia runoffs turn out? It's going to be a razor thin margin no matter which way you slice it. And the president-elect has said whatever gets passed, if something gets passed during this lame duck session, is going to be a down payment for something much bigger.
Well, right. I mean, this is what, Obama wanted a much bigger stimulus than he got in 2009 as well, and he had all three chambers. It's a very hard thing, particularly with a, $3 trillion deficit and rising. So, I mean, I just think one of the key factors both parties are looking at to look towards 2022, because that's where both parties are looking right now, at least on the Congress side, is that suburban voters were willing to split their ticket. And suburban voters who had voted Republican straight down the line voted for Joe Biden, and maybe just because they didn't like Trump. We don't know for sure, but they were willing to do that and then vote for Republicans in other offices. Knowing that they're willing to do that means that they're up for grabs. And I think that's the sort of Achilles heel for the Republicans in blocking everything for Biden. I don't think they think they can do that and still safely hold on to the seats they want to defend in 2022. So that's where Biden and the Democrats have a bit of a bargaining advantage in trying to get moderate proposals through that will help COVID, will help the economy, will make suburban voters happy.
I'm curious to get your take on how Biden has been starting to fill out his cabinet now. There are reports that he plans to announce his health team next week. And one of the names we're hearing for Health and Human Services Secretary is someone that you're familiar with in your home state of Rhode Island, Governor Gina Raimondo.
Yeah, Gina Raimondo has done an outstanding job in a very small state, but a very, very heavily, densely populated state. So she's been dealing with sort of a big outbreak for a long time. It subsided, then it came back. She's been excellent at communication and made some missteps very early on in terms of summer management with nursing homes, as other governors did. But generally speaking, has had very high approval ratings and has been thought to make the situation much better than it would have been. So she's shown leadership in a very stressful time, and she's also communicated really well about why she's doing what she's doing. And I think any pick for HHS secretary has to be an excellent communicator, because you have to basically explain to the American people why we're doing what we're doing and when we're doing it. And she's been doing that so consistently, and that has helped bring her state, not complete compliance, but bring her state along in a way that's been relatively successful.
Are you surprised at all that at least so far we haven't heard any names of Democratic primary opponents on any of Biden's cabinet shortlists?
Well, he just can't take anybody out of the Senate, right? So that takes Warren out. That takes Sanders out. I know Sanders people are very disappointed about that. And I think that's what Bernie Sanders was hoping for. But you just can't take a Democrat out of the Senate. Even with a Democrat governor, you still can't do it right now. So that makes sense to me. I think Pete Buttigieg, I think people wanted him to get something. He may still get something. There's been talk about Veterans Affairs. But remember, the Republicans have been relatively receptive to Biden's choices so far, except for one choice, Neera Tanden for OMB. I think that's going to hit some bumps along the way, probably big bumps. But generally speaking, he wants a smooth cabinet confirmation, process. So anybody who's super politicized and more to the left of Biden for a top job is just probably out of the question, given the composition of the Senate.
Only about 30 seconds left here. Do you think Attorney General Barr is on borrowed time after the voter fraud allegations from President Trump?
I think Attorney General Barr looked ahead to the future and decided, does he want to leave the Trump administration with any shreds of credibility? And I think this move was designed to show that he would indeed try to leave with credibility and confirm the election, knowing he's going to leave anyway and, thinking about what's next. So that he gets fired or doesn't get fired, I think what he did was forward-thinking for him, not necessarily for President Trump.
Thank you. Always good having you on with us. Brown University Political Science Chair Wendy Schiller with us this morning on Bloomberg Daybreak. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 6:56 on Wall Street. It is time for the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. It's brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology. NJIT makes research breakthroughs and is ranked one of the nation's most research-intensive universities by Carnegie Classification. More at njit.edu/R1. Now, here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. A mobile app could be used to track the health of fans from abroad if they attend next year's Tokyo Olympics. It was in the spring, 8 months ago, when organizers and the International Olympic Committee decided to postpone the Games after repeatedly saying they would go ahead this year. Shoppers on Walmart.com who pay a $98 a year membership fee will get free shipping on orders of any size starting tomorrow. Walmart is doing away with a previous requirement that orders amount to at least $35 to qualify for free shipping. The perk comes 2 months after Walmart launched its membership service called Walmart Plus, which it hopes will compete with Amazon Prime. And astronomers say a mysterious object temporarily orbiting Earth is a 54-year-old rocket, not an asteroid after all. The object was originally classified as an asteroid after its discovery in September, but NASA's top asteroid expert quickly suspected it was the Centaur upper rocket stage from Surveyor 2, a failed 1966 moon landing mission. And that's the Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. We're watching futures this morning with S&P futures struggling for direction, down less than a point right now. Dow futures down 18. NASDAQ futures, they're up 23. And the 10-year Treasury is up 3/32, yield 0.92%. Yield on the two-year, 0.15%. Bloomberg Surveillance is straight ahead with Tom Keene, Jonathan Farrow, and Lisa Abramowitz. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.